Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of season 6. If you've just joined, I'm Robin, about a tired witch everywhere, and I'm joined by the beautiful, the goddess, the mother.
The mother.
The mother. Maria of Magic with Maria Everywhere.
I would like to be introduced like that. Like,
as mother. Chicago.
Be like, the mother. Yeah.
The mother. Only if you call me the Supreme. And then yes. The audience bows.
Yes.
Speaking of Chicago, we're going to see you guys in just under 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. We've got the Windy City Parafest coming. It's going to be June 12th through 15th. It is in Chicago. We really hope to see you there. As a reminder, if you want to be there but you can't for whatever reason, they've got streaming tickets now available. Mm-hmm. And if you use the code COFFEE at checkout, you get a discount.
Yeah.
So,
and that includes the tickets if you come and see us. So
yes.
Use that yes. discount.
Yes. And Maria and I also were planning to honor that if you bought a streaming ticket and you would have liked to have gotten a reading from us there, or bought in for the group spells that we're doing, mm-hmm. that if you send us your receipt, you want in for the group spells, we're going to be posting about it. Mm-hmm. Just send us a receipt that you had a streaming ticket, and we are happy to honor that.
Yeah.
So,
sounds good.
Join us.
And we have a very special instructor this month that will be doing a class this Saturday. And it's going to be taught by someone called Robin Valentine.
I mean,
I've never heard of her, but it sounds great.
Unfortunately, I do know her and the inner workings of her mind. And when I tell you she's highly educated, but extremely annoying, I think it speaks for itself, you know? In reality, I really hope you guys join me at 12 on May 31st. It's going to be a class on hexes, curses, and baneful magic in general. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be sharing some of my favorite... little toss arounds. And we even have a sample person to hex if you just really want to hex a person and you don't have anybody to do it on. Isn't that so fun, guys?
That's so fun. And also, guys, for our copy talks, we would like you to send us some voicemails. You can send us your tips, like a witchy story or just like a ghost story. We love ghost stories, especially hospital ghost stories. If you are a nurse and have a story, you should definitely call this number and leave us a voicemail. There is a 3-minute like cutoff point, but if you don't finish your story, just call us back and we will put it all together. But that number is 351-207-0799.
Week we talk about upcoming lunar phases and how you can utilize those in your magical practice. So the nearest one from where we are, and I think that actually when we are gone in Chicago, we're going to have to do a little catch-up week because we're starting to do a little bit of overlapping. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be the full moon in Sagittarius. That is on June 11th. And full moons in Sagittarius... Well, full moons in general, as we know, are really great for like big harness power. Sagittarius full moons, I feel like, are very self-aware, including bringing stuff kind of to the surface that perhaps on a individual level we have been ignoring. Mm-hmm. So this is a good time for spell work that involves releasing any doubts or insecurities we have, and also having divination, in my opinion, that deals with radical self-reflection, mm-hmm. Hearing the hard truths that perhaps we've been avoiding, mm-hmm. Having meditations with our guides on things that maybe we have been avoiding or don't want to hear, but need to hear. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
No, I completely agree. And I do, like, I view full moons and sags as like definitely like just abundant energy, you know, like
totally.
If you need anything moving that is like stagnant right now, let's say your job has gone stagnant, money flow has gone stagnant, anything that you need like movement
towards. Like, this is the one to do it towards. Or if you like, there's a trip you want to go on or anything like that. Sagittarius is very good with like traveling. So you can do like a massive spell for that. And Sagittariuses are also, yes, we say this every podcast, but they're also a good like sex magic sign to work with.
She's just so horny, you guys. It's actually out of control.
But yeah, everyone has to spice things up, especially for a new lover. Like, this is a great moon to work with that energy around.
Guys, can we talk about something? Can we igloo? Hey, listeners, Maria, this isn't for you. Can we igloo? The Sagittarius new moon is the day before Maria and I are hanging out. And actually, it falls. It'll continue on falling. She's talking about a new lover. No. Everyone, is she trying to sleep with me? The answer is no, Maria. I'm in a committed relationship. And no matter how lesbian coded you think I look, I say in my jumpsuit.
I mean, everyone thinks that we're married anyways.
That is true. Maybe it's time we take it to the next level.
But we'll see how much energy I have during that full moon, so I could do a travel spell for us. A little protection travel spell.
See how much energy so we can have sex. And I'm like, I just told you no. The stuff and I'll be fine. Just told you I'm not interested. No means no, Maria. Look, it's a full sentence.
I'm planning to put my pheromones in a spray bottle. Just spray it all around the hotel room.
Oh my God. She's sick and twisted, everyone.
Okay, so every season we have gone over something to do with tarot. Like the first season, we were just doing like random cards in tarot and talking about them, like came upright, reverse. It was whatever, you know, the flavor of that episode was. And then we moved on to doing the whole whole sections in tarot. It just kind of like telling you guys about them, you know, like the major arcana, the minor arcana, the aces, the tens, the queens, and all that jazz. But this season, we are concentrating on just like doing like a shuffle and draw for like a collective reading where you can still kind of, you know, learn tarot, but you can also be like, oh, well, this resonates. But a reminder that since this is for the collective, it isn't for everyone. It's just for, you know, for the mass people. It is the energy many people are experiencing. And yeah. It might not resonate with you, and that is completely okay.
That's okay. Take it if it resonates. Leave it if it doesn't.
Okay. But I am using Magical Hours Tarot for this one. Let's see what pops up. Okay. So this week we have, if you're on YouTube, let's see, the Three of Pentacles. And to me, this card is a community card. It is about like coming together as a community to work on something. Let's say we all want a better country. Like, we're all coming together to make that happen, to facilitate change and to build up, you know, a goal that we want with like many people. And I think this card is very, very like any community card in tarot is important, especially it's a reminder, you know, we live in late stage capitalism right now where we're told like, be, you know, hyper individual, like do not count on anyone, just count on yourself. But that's just a toxic mindset. Like, we need community in order to get further ahead. And, you know, the people who profit the most on late stage capitalism, like, they do count on other people to help get their goals off the ground. So they're telling you not to do it because they know how helpful it is. So yeah, this card is just kind of like, go for it, you know?
Go for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to bounce off that and talking about community in a grander, better, beautiful way. I know that we've talked about this before. I'm a very out and loud socialist. Democratic socialist. And in that, I'm a very big believer in working with the community that you have to make it a better place, the community around you. So obviously we think about community like, you know, your friends, your family, whatever. But I think the miss part of this card is community also includes the people you don't like. even the people that you are not, you would not invite to your house for dinner. They exist in your community and therefore part of living your life in a way that is actual betterment and actually building up your community is including the people you don't care for and would not think of you in bettering your community. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Obviously, guys, don't go to the racist guy down the street who just wants to murder you.
Like, take it with me. Like, no, if someone heard me say that and they're like, Robin wants us to support our KKK neighbor, then you and I are on different wavelengths and perhaps this is not the podcast for you. But, like, for example, there's a bunch of people who voted against me and my family's rights this last election. It's really abundant in the area that we live in. But I still help organize the community food bank and the library swaps, even though it includes people that directly voted against my family. I don't know. It's something to think about is that when we think of community, I think we need to expand our minds and kind of practice what we preach.
I don't know. Small steps.
I'm getting sidetracked, but I do feel like that very strongly when it comes to this card because teamwork is about everyone and, you know, nobody wins unless everybody wins type mentality.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, those people will recognize or if they're not already realize that, like, you know, how important community is and everything that's happening is actually going against their interests too. It's not going to hit them until it actually affects them.
I mean, and obviously this doesn't just affect politics, but it is such an easy example when we are, you know, talking about this card. Because this card is all about community. It is all about teamwork. It is all about working with that guy in your office who you fucking hate. But you know what? He is really good at spreadsheets and he's a part of that team, whether you like it or not. So
this episode, I am joined by an amazing guest, an author who has a brand new book coming out soon. And you guys will tell that Robin is not here for this one. Her brother is actually coming into town tonight. So she's spending time with her family, much needed family time. So I am actually here with Leah Middleton. And go ahead and tell us your socials, how to find you and your books, the name of your book.
Yeah. Well, hello. Thank you so much for hosting me, Maria. It's always a joy to see you and to be in your presence. Okay. My socials. I am so bad at introducing myself and getting that all laying the land. My handle is the Redheaded Witch. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, even though I'm not as active on TikTok these days, and then on YouTube and also primarily on Patreon. That is where I spend most of my time. And in terms of my book, my newest book, it is called Magic from the Hilltops and Hollers. And the publishing day is the beginning of September. you know how publishing is. I believe the date is September 3rd. Or 9th, could be 4th, could be one or the other. It's the beginning of September, which is interesting because that is the same month that my first book came out. It's not the exact date, but it is the same month. So September has been a recurring theme in published work. Not done on purpose. It just has happened that way.
So it's like you have to have those autumnal like release books. Like,
yeah,
it's just a vibe. Like, that's a perfect time for like liquid tea books to come out.
Sure. So. I know there's like a whole marketing reason behind it for publishers. totally get it. I'm in the marketing world as well. But Magic from the Hilltops and Hollers is a book about Southern Appalachian folk healing and magic and superstitions. Yeah. So this one is pretty different from my first one. My first book, The Beginner Witch's Handbook, is really an introduction, hence the title. So, and it's also half of a spell book, I would also say, because there's lots of beginner-friendly workings in there. And in my first book, I do provide some context of my own background, and I mention how I'm from Appalachia and how that has informed, you know, my own ancestral journey and discovering those practices. So this one is more of an emphasis of that conversation. It is the primary focus of it, hence the title. so I think, but a big difference in this one as well is that I do weave some personal stories in there too. So I wanted that to be something unique and something that I have not necessarily seen. I have obviously read other witchcraft books that have like obviously people's personal experiences in it. But at the beginning of most of the chapters, I provide kind of like a little memory. And so
I love that.
Yeah. So it's so kind of like also walking down memory lane and providing some context of what the chapter is about. So
that's all so good. Honestly, I love when witches include like personal things. Like some of my favorite witchcraft books like include the personal things. I mean, Starhawk did it, and I don't know if you read like Spell in the Wild, but that was a very 10 out of 10 book. Definitely.
Okay.
I'm writing I think I spoke it on like last podcast, actually. Yeah. But it's all a personal account and just like how she approaches magic. And I think we can learn, like, obviously, there's so much great information in books that like intellectualize the paths and stuff like that. But just making it personal is, so important, I think. And I think that's how we can connect better with witches rather than just sticking to like just straight facts and how to. So you putting those like personal little details is so exciting. So exciting.
Totally. I agree. And I felt like specifically on this topic and in this subject, and I'm sure you can relate to where there has been like a resurgence of Appalachian practices, and it's kind of like, you know, getting more light shined on it, for better or for worse. And I think like one of the ways that we can ensure the integrity of Appalachia is to encourage more voices and encourage more perspectives because of how diverse the region is. And so it's really difficult to be able to, and I even, you know, mentioned this in my book, it's very difficult for there to be just a singular playbook of Appalachian folk magic because it just doesn't really exist. It is like a tradition where it's more of like an umbrella term where many traditions coexist together. And, you know, I've seen more and more conversations, especially kind of, you know, be more vocal about myself and like my own practices. I'm seeing more and more folks from the region also talk about it. And so I'm like, oh, I would really love to see more books from other Appalachian witches. Like, I hope to see more.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you and I actually had this whole conversation about like,
we've talked about this.
How like, even in like different, you know, spirituality, like sex in witchcraft, that like, you know, you're still like in the, you're still unique. You still like have your own experiences and stuff like that. And like, Mm-hmm. Just can you tell, like, why do you think that is so important to have like those unique practices in order to like practice mm-hmm. at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think diversity should be celebrated. And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, being in conversation with other folks who identify in a similar way, and being able to be in conversation with them, you learn a lot from others, like when you are in conversation, and you really get to have like a well-rounded understanding of other people's perspectives, and maybe opening up a door of like, you know, maybe someone's approach, you had never thought of it that way. You know, if someone, you know, especially if it comes to something as intimate as like venerating ancestors, and they're like, oh, I've mm-hmm. never actually considered that path for me specifically, like how, you know, why would you do this? How would you do this? And, you know, what have you learned? And so being able to like open the door and have kind of like that approach of celebrating diversity and celebrating different perspectives versus trying to patrol and trying to like be like, oh, you do it this way, well, therefore you're not practicing it. But it's like, no, that's not, you know, there's nuance here. And I'm talking specifically within Appalachia because I've had these conversations, I've seen them online, and then I've had them offline, and it doesn't, it just doesn't transfer offline. Especially as someone who was born and raised in the region and then only recently moved away. And I, even that, you know, there has been some discomfort of like, oh, well, you don't live there. And I'm like, well, not right now. No.
It's still part like, of you.
Yeah. Like, but I've only just moved away like 3 years next month. It'll be 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's still a part of you. But anyways, I think that like when it comes to, you know, having uniqueness and spiritual practices really does just, I don't know what the word is, just it really, it just allows it to be living. It's experience.
Yeah.
Like it is
absolutely
not, you know, it's not something of the past. It's not something that's, you know, like made up here. It's a part of someone's life. So that's my personal feeling about it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think that's such a big problem, like in the witch community, speaking in absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, I feel like it's like, unfortunately, like newer practitioners, like they get really mm-hmm. caught up in those absolutes.
Yeah.
But then you also have the people who they know how to use the absolutes in their power. Mm. Like, you know, they're the kind of like the toxic people in our community.
Totally. Like, there's definitely
just
like
an absolutes.
Yes. And I would be just aware of like any sort of power dynamic that is at play, you know?
Yes. Absolutely.
You think about this like in other spaces of our lives, you know, you think about it in workspaces, relationships, family dynamics, like the magical and spiritual space is no different. Like there are power dynamics at play. And if we're talking about, you know, Appalachian specifically, like I would say like a value of Appalachian folk magic is like combating these power dynamics, you know, like
absolutely
a region who had experienced exploitation through capitalism. And you think about the mine wars, like if I think that it's really important to just recognize anything like that could be occurring.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, oh, it's just a huge problem, like everywhere, as you said.
Yes.
And like, as you said, like, you know, making it your own and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just crazy, like this whole sustainableness. Like you're not like, you're not, you know, taking someone else's practice, copy and pasting it onto yours. Like, But yeah.
Totally.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Because like you said, it would not be sustainable in that way. You know, like my relationship with the spirits that I work with, like if I you know, saw someone also working with a similar spirit, and I just like applied it with my own intimate relationship with them. Like it's not authentic, you know, like it wouldn't feel authentic. And, you know, I think about like, again, like that would just, again, not be sustainable. And at the end of it, it would fall apart.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. There's only so for so long in areas of your life where you can act like someone else, you know?
Yes, totally. Totally.
But yeah, how did your unique upbringing and even experiences influence like how you uniquely practice like folk magic?
Yeah. So I think we've had this conversation in other spaces. I go to Maria for my readings when I'm experiencing chaos.
Trusted. I love reading for you.
I love it. I love it.
I love our conversation.
I trust you so much with that. You know, I did grow up as a Southern Baptist, and I think a lot of folks can share that similar story. I did, you know, also grow up in a space where, although I was raised Southern Baptist, it wasn't like a very strict household. My mom was very, my mom was very still, I would consider like a spiritual person. She was very open-minded. So was her sister. And so my aunt was really the one that kind of opened my perspective of like, you know, the land is living. I have many memories where we would go hiking in DuPont State Forest, and she would be like, you know, talking about like fairies, talking about the nature spirits, like sitting down, like wanting to like draw out. It's just, she was like a huge influence and kind of opening a different perspective. But I still went to church on Sundays.
And I'm so jealous of anyone who has like that magical aunt.
I did. And I also had another aunt who was rather opposite, when just sending Bible verses. So I had duality. Okay. There was a lot of duality happening. And, you know, I'm very grateful to have lived in an environment in that way. But when my parents had divorced, and when that happened, you know, my father was pretty much not someone who went to church. He also grew up in the church. His family, it comes from a line of like preachers and farmers, but you know, my grandfather was very religious, but, when we were kids and growing up, he did not make it a priority. You know, he kind of had this idea, like, if I'm a good person, then that's it. I don't need to go to church, and I don't need structured religion, essentially. And, you know, I was rather young when this happened. I really did not comprehend what this meant for me in terms of my own beliefs. And, you know, time went on, and I still had friends who were religious, who invited me to their churches. So I was went to a Pentecostal church. I went to a Catholic church. I just went to church with friends, because that is so common in the South.
I agree.
Like, you do cookouts and you do like barbecues and things and like, you know, whatever. So this went on for, you know, some time. And then by the time I was in high school, I was in this relationship. and I started
it was forever,
to.
Right?
Yeah.
Forever.
And I started to attend church again, influenced by him, obviously. And at this point, I was now old enough to really decipher what, you know, to really take in like what I was being taught, what I was being told, all of the things by this preacher. And it was discouraging because they really emphasized like fear as a tactic. It was very like, this is what hell sounds like. And I'm like, what? And I just was like, this is not for me. This does not feel aligned. you know, with my values and with my morals. And so at that point, I finally made the decision for myself and was like, structured religion, you know, Baptist church, Christianity, it's not for me. However, I will say that has influenced my practice in a way where there was the value that was integrated to me very young, which was to be a good neighbor. And it actually in my book, not to like spoil, but whatever. So in my book, I talk about how there are three values that not are necessarily unified, you know, they're not shared across. Again, you kind of bring about that, you know, playbook era. It's not shared among everyone, but it is one that I think is familiar. And so the first one was to be a good neighbor. The second one is to give thanks always. And the third one is to respect your elders. And so, and I define elders as not necessarily family, but also elders' spirits. So these three values essentially were inspired by my Christian roots, like by going to church every Sunday and just what I was taught. But it's adapted in a way where it's not within this doctrine. It's not within, you know, what the church decides who is a good neighbor and who is not. Who is your neighbor? Who is not? And how you should treat them. So this has informed my practice in a new way. You know, it has allowed me to expand my magical practice where, you know, the workings I do are not necessarily always for myself, but they are also for other people. You know, friends, direct friends, or within my own like Patreon community or within my local community. I think I've shared, I don't know how much I have shared publicly, but I work at a nonprofit that focuses on affordable housing. And I came into this particular work, you know, only a few years ago when I did relocate here in the Pacific Northwest. And it did occur to me that this was kind of like a natural pathway that was an extension of my practice because of the spirits that I had worked with and continue to work with, such as St. Bridget, who is a spirit that really focuses on home and also the arts. So this is like, you know, this has kind of allowed me to put into practice a core value of what I see in Appalachian folk magic. And, you know, it may not be magical in the traditional sense, but it is, it is magical to me. So
honestly, like the whole community aspect, I think like, I always like to go back to like before we had internet, before, you know, we had like people could travel, we had our communities. And you're completely right. Like the whole community aspect is important, like so much to the craft and stuff like that. And
especially in this region, because you think about like historically, you know, you think about like the medicine landscape, you know, and how like local healers were just pillars in their community, not only for, you know, medicine for folks who have uteruses, like women's health care, but also for folks who, you know, did not have access to doctors or, you know, had experienced like prejudices, you know, all of the things. And so their local healers served their community, witches, practitioners, doctors, conjurers, however they individually identified, they were justice workers and they were, you know, healers. And so I think, you know, when we talk about like, how does, you know, kind of like, how do you honor like older traditions with like, you know, with today, that has never gone away. Like, I think that like a lot, like, you know, the Western mindset of individualism has really, really, I don't know, like tainted up. I don't know what the word is. Like,
it brings up the absolutism in like witchcraft a lot.
Totally. And And I, you know, I will be so transparent. I think because of also how I grew up, I also left home very early, you know, pretty young. I moved out when I was 15, 16 years old. So by the time I was driving, I was solely responsible for myself. And because of that, I had developed this, like, you know, idea that I, you know, no one else can help me. Like, I think I had skepticism. Like, I was very skeptical of the idea that anyone would want to extend a helping hand. And I think, you know, looking back, like, I had so many neighbors that stepped in, that housed me, that supported me, that taught me. And I was going somewhere with this. But I think, like, you know, I've had to unlearn that, is what I'm saying. I've had to unlearn my individualism and relearn what it meant to be in community. Because I do think that, like, we kind of learn that in early family dynamics. And so if we don't have that, we kind of end up learning it as an adult, which sometimes can be, you know, a struggle to do, especially in our society. But in the witchcraft and when you kind of observe, like, witchcraft and folk magic practices, especially within Appalachia, you just see this reoccurring theme of, like, to be of service to others and, you know, to have each other's back. And so that is just so prominent in Appalachia, just historically, like, being able to show up for your neighbor, even if it's inconvenient, even if it's uncomfortable, even if you don't know how, like, to just to be able to do it.
I completely agree. I really think, you know, it's a whole, like, late stage capitalism thing where we don't think that we can ask for help. But I think the only way to get ahead is to be in service of community and be part of community. So,
yes,
I love that part about Appalachia.
Yes.
Magic. So, yes, I completely agree. Yeah. But do you think there are any ways that the tradition can evolve responsibly without losing its heart? Because I know, like, you know, like, with any witchcraft practice, like, when it comes to modern and how it was practiced, like, there's, like, a butting of heads. And I think that's part of the thing, like, where people get stuck and where they fall in the absolutism too, rather than kind of, like, adapt.
Yeah, totally. And I understand the hesitance too, because, like, we do live, like you said, like, we live in such a capitalist, like, world where it's very easy to fall into this idea of, like, consumerism. And, you know, that's, you know, I need specific material. Also, don't look at my materials while I say this. No, I'm just kidding. But I think, like, you know, I think that identifying that and, like, your relationship with capitalism is one of the ways that you can, that tradition can remain the heart. You know, it's not going to be, you know, consumerism is not going to infiltrate, like, this. And I struggle with the word tradition, because tradition is so, like, used as a singular way, and it can really be
so many things.
You kind of, like, tread lightly of, like, purity and everything. So I struggle with that word a little bit. But, you know, it is one of the ways to kind of, like, avoid, like, delusion. I don't know, like, kind of, like, diluting a tradition or forgetting, like, what the values are. And if the listeners get anything out of this podcast, it's this. Like, I would highly encourage, if there is a region of interest of a folk magic practice, that you really spend some quality time understanding the history. Because that's going to provide so much context of the why and the how. And, you know, I think, too, especially with Appalachian folk magic, it's not it's not obvious. You know, it is, it's really woven into mundane, what is viewed as mundane, you know, mm-hmm. like whether it's cleaning, tending the home, tending the garden, whatever it may be. And I think like that is going to ensure, you know, like that you can adapt the past to the present. You know, it's like me working with the Bible still. It's like, well, you don't identify as Christian. No, I don't. I do identify how the region of specifically my ancestors, like many of them did identify as Christian. So my one of the extensions of my practice is ancestor veneration. And I have learned that my ancestors like to have conversation through this text. Yeah. And being able to adapt Bible verses to specific workings. I know some folks will have certain feelings about that. But in my practice, that is what I do. I use divination to find what Bible verse to work with, specifically within the Book of Psalms. And then I will rewrite it. But it's inspired by something that my ancestors have used before. And so, that's where nuance comes in.
Yeah. The Bible is still a book of mythology and folklore. And like people do view it as a book of spells. Like that totally makes sense. Even you know, you can view it in a certain way and still create. So I completely agree.
Yeah. But I think, I think understanding like the history is going to be this, the keeper of information for you to be able to, again, make it unique, but understanding the roots as well.
Yes. So important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as you mentioned earlier, you did move away to the opposite side of the country.
I could not have gone further.
Up to Asheville all the time.
I know.
But yeah, how are you currently merging like the new land you are on with like where your practice stemmed from? Like that has to be so wild. Like,
I mean, sometimes I have a severe identity crisis because I will share, like a few weeks ago when I was exploring my own family tree, I had discovered that I am not the only family member that did relocate, away from, Kentucky, North Carolina, all of that central southern region. And I struggled a lot, and I share my grievances in my book about it, kind of this like tug and pull relationship of, wanting to honor my roots and be, be with the past generations and honoring the past and kind of, diving into that work there. At the same time, I also, for my specific story, it's not going to be the same for everyone. For my story, I also went through tumultuous years that led me to the decision of, for me and my family, so me and my partner, to relocate. And since moving here, it has been a slow process. I think the most important relationship that I can build here that was similar to the relationship I build back home was just becoming acquainted with the land spirits, with my local land, and understanding the history here, which is new to me. I did not learn, Washington state history in North Carolina. Did not learn that. So there's so much here that historically I don't have context for yet. And I think that is going to be really like the foundation that I'm going to build up. I'm going to the more that I learn and the more that I see similarities of other Appalachians who relocated here and what that means and how that changed over time, I think that is going to open up a new doorway for me and be able to learn how to balance both and to integrate both of them together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like I said, I mean, like you said, it has been kind of a whirlwind. I will also say, moving from somewhere that is a mountain town to somewhere mm-hmm. where I now have access to the coastline an hour or so away is very different. Like,
oh, sure.
Like, very different. Sure. And I love water. I love the ocean. I won't go in the ocean, but I will I love the Pacific Ocean. I think it's beautiful. Mm. And
yeah, it is so pretty up there.
And there is so much rich history of the indigenous peoples up here as well, of like their relationship with the large mountains and volcanoes and the complex like rivers and oceans and just sounds. I mean, there's so much to be discovered here. So ask me again in like 5 years.
Honestly, it just sounds like a whole new adventure. But I'd like you kind of like traded one wild place for like another. So it's kind of like easy to kind of adapt because you're used to that kind of like energy and, you know, place.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, it's interesting because when I, you know, we didn't know anybody when we moved out here. I have some family that live a few hours away, but ultimately we moved here sight unseen. Like, we did not know very much about the town that we were moving to. And we were like, you know what, if it works, it works. And the space where I work, I ended up finding out that my coworker grew up an hour away from me.
That's crazy.
And so, I mean, it is just like a taste of home, you know, like she brought in the other day strawberry shortcakes, like with like homemade biscuits and everything. And she was like, oh, I made some. And I was like, you have no idea what this means, like what this means to me, because this is like a summer treat, like back home. And she goes, oh, yeah. And that's like, I don't know. That to me is just like a little, you know, just like a little kind of divine, like, message of like, you are where you're supposed to be. And you're not the only one that has done this. So I think, I don't know. I love that. It's like I'm far away from home, but I have other folks who are or like home. So
yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. I love how you brought up like strawberry shortcakes. My witchling at the last day of school, today was the last day of school, they had literally brought strawberry shortcakes to school for their friends. And they do every single year since we moved. So
I love that. Yes.
Yeah. It's because my wife is Southern, so they get it from.
Yes. Yeah. That's so good. It was a taste of home.
Okay. But let's go ahead and wrap this up. Go ahead and let everyone again know where to find you and the title of your new book. And everyone go and find Leah. Leah is an amazing practitioner.
Oh, just thanks. So my new book, Magic from the Hilltops and Hollers, is out in the beginning of September, but you can pre-order it now. You can pre-order it pretty much anywhere where you find books, and also encourage your local bookstore to get it in stock so you can support them. You can find my social media platforms, The Redheaded Witch, on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, but I am primarily spending a lot of time writing for Patreon. It is where you will get more in-depth material. So
not just 30-second videos.
Yes, not just me quilting and then making a mistake on an apron.
Whatever. Don't listen to Leah. Her quilting is amazing. Don't believe
it. Oh, that's great. Thank you.
But yeah, thank you so much for joining. Yes. And hopefully we'll have you on again sometime soon.
I love to. Thank you so much for having me. And bye,
of course.
So, Robin, what is...
It's the lean in stop every
it.
Time.
Stop it.
What is stirring your cauldron right now?
Thank you so much for asking.
I think the question is, are we doing that on stage in Chicago during our live episode?
Should we what?
Do it during our live episode.
Oh my God, absolutely. We should do it during a live. Yeah, are you fucking kidding with me?
Everyone who doesn't watch us is going to be like, what?
Are you fucking kidding with me? I'm like so excited to make a room full of people uncomfortable. It's going to be so good. Are you kidding with me? Okay. Thank you so much for asking. So what is stirring my cauldron right now is my garden is finally blooming. It's blossoming, baby. My peas have got flowers. My kale is growing. My potatoes are exploding. My broccoli have little broccoli florets coming up. I mean, we're at a 12 out of 10 right now. I am feeling extremely excited, especially considering most of the stuff in the garden I grew from a seed.
Mm-hmm. No,
and
that's great.
Just, I feel powerful with that. I don't know like what it is. It's my first time doing a real garden. And I feel so like, fuck the system. I'll do it myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel very tradwife in like the not racist, not problematic way. I feel very like, home and country, like, yeah, this is my Liberty Garden. And I did that. And like last night I made my family dinner and all the vegetables in it came out of the garden. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Good job.
It felt so good.
Robin's like, Mother Earth now.
Pictures.
She's not the Supreme anymore. She's Mother
Earth. This is why they call me the Supreme. Is because I literally have never fucked up anything I've ever done. What a joke. But yeah, I'm feeling very good about it. I don't know. So, Maria, what's not stirring your cauldron this week?
I'm going to tell you.
So, you guys know that I love going outdoors. I love the outdoors. The outdoors are amazing. Like, yeah, it's amazing. But your girl also lives in the South. I am I am allergic to mosquitoes. I know everyone is allergic to mosquitoes, but I am allergic to mosquitoes. And a lot of my mosquitoes.
She is. It's actually like so crazy.
The other day, I lifted
added to her list of ridiculous ailments.
I lifted up my pant leg and my mosquito bite is like, I don't know, it's about like 4 inches by 4 inches and it is black and blue like a bruise and it is a swollen. And I'm just saying, what is not starting my cauldron is mosquitoes. Like, you know, it's all in the, like in Lilo and Stitch where the like mosquitoes are like useless, but like they're carriers of disease. Like, I know they're pollinators too. I know, but there are other pollinators out there. Like, they're terrible and I don't like them. If there was like any of like Earth's creatures that I'm like, yeah, I could do without them, that is mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are the worst. I just want to enjoy the outdoors, you know. Gnats are already bad here, and then you add mosquitoes who, you know, just the swarming and the darting trying to get to you.
Yeah.
And the ones in South Carolina are tiny, so you don't feel them when they land on you. So,
hell no. For those who are listening, I recently discovered a mosquito bait trap thing by a company called Spartan.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Spartan Tech Pro Mosquito Trap. I sent it to Maria. It works so good. I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. Game changer, life changer. It's so amazing and good. And you can't ship it into California, which is where I live, which is how you know it works. So my ass drove all the way to Oregon to buy some. So...
That is hilarious.
Do your thing, everyone. Go. There are so many wasps outside my window right now. But listen, I'm getting distracted. The thing is, go buy some. Yeah. They work. So
have you seen
welcome.
The little dragonfly thing that keeps mosquitoes away? Like, you can pin it
I
to your hat, and there's like.
But you know what? I remember you talking about this before. I don't want to look insane. I just want there are so many things that I avoid toxin wise. Like I'm so good about so many different things. But when it comes to like bugs that will spread infectious disease, yeah, we can have a bunch of fucking toxins in my backyard as long as my kids are not touching it.
I would be willing to do it while on a hike just because you already have sunscreen on down here. And then you add on the bug spray, your skin feels fucking nasty, especially like when you start sweating. It is gross. It is so nasty. Yeah. And so having a little drink, I'm curious if it does work. I know.
They're probably like $3 on the internet.
I doubt it. They're going to charge like a billion. Like, probably $15 for something you could make that is, you know, let's see. Especially with tariffs.
Oh, yeah, with the tariffs, definitely. You can get a six-pack for $13.
What if you just need one?
For $8. What if you break them?
That's true.
You're saying what over $8? Miss Girl, I know your ass drinks the lavender cold brews at the local.
No.
You drink some
insane. I'm a plain Jane, actually.
You're so full of shit. It's crazy.
Ask Scarlett. Like, literally, I'm fine with just a latte, like a plain latte.
You know what?
And
I'm
going to
treat you, and I'm going to buy this for you, and I'm going to bring it to Chicago, and that will be my gift to you for summer.
You're used to West Coast prices. I'm used to East.
I don't even know what that means.
Things are so cheap down here. I mean, you saw the price of the houses down here. Even you were like, maybe it's just...
Move to fucking South Carolina. And then I remembered that sounds like the worst idea imaginable. Like, they have ones that are really expensive, but then they have ones that are not for hiking. And I'm buying this for you, and I'm sorry, you are balking at $9. You're insane. This woman will pre-order a tarot deck for $120, and she won't get it for 12 years.
Produced, like,
but
what,
then she
plastic?
Gets, she's like, oh, this bug repellent free alternative that cost me
that is like a dollar
the same
store
price as a cup
buy.
Of coffee.
It's a dollar store.
I couldn't
buy.
Possibly.
It's I'm dollar gonna,
I'm buying
store
for you.
Or five
consider
below
it done. I've
for
ordered
a pack.
It. I've already ordered it. I literally have bought it. I've purchased it. I am giving it to you. This is my gift to you. You're welcome.
But see, the tarot decks are an artist's love.
You sound insane. I literally I've already purchased it. You can consider it done for Chicago.
And you should be so proud of me. I haven't bought a tarot deck in a long, long time. Not since the healthcare bill started rolling in.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, God. Okay.
If you've just joined us this week, every week we talk about creatives that we are loving right now. These can be anyone from social media accounts, books, art, shops, just whatever. These are not ads. And as a reminder, if you have someone that you think the community would love to hear, send them to us so we can shout them out. That being said, Maria, who are you into this week?
So they are River Birch Threads, but I'm speaking specifically about the... embroidery that they do on the pockets of like jeans. They have like flowers like overflowing the pockets and stuff like that, and it's just so pretty. It's just some of the like embroidery people do is insane. And I mean, their other stuff is really great too, but I'm specifically talking about the pockets. Like, I would, like, I'm not even a jean wearer, and I would wear the hell out of those. Like, they're very cute. How about you? Who are you loving?
So I think I've already actually shouted out this
we
shop
have
before
many times.
The Pickety Witch.
I love her.
But listen, I'm not a tiki mug girl. I'm not a tiki lounge girly. And I know that they were having issues with tariffs, and it did sound like they got it resolved.
Good.
But they have done a Baphomet goat tiki mug.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks so freaking cool. I'm like, I am not a tiki mug person, and I'm like, yeah, I think I want this.
I'm trying to
I
look it up.
I think I need to have this. I think I must have this tiki mug. It just looks so cool. I don't drink. I'm sober. But I feel like I could use it for something else. Maybe I'll put my reusable straws in it. I don't know. I just think it's so cool. It's like the, you know, very 50s.
That's cute.
I don't know. Tiki bar. Maybe I'll make it like a mojito.
I use beer, like the German beer steins, like the really big ones that you get at Oktoberfest for water because it carries so, so much good. Water. So you're just... The Scarlet laughs at me because I'm like, I put it on my desk and it goes, and it literally, like, this the sound it makes. It's like putting, like, you know, down Thor's hammer. Like, it's so loud.
That's so funny. Well, our listener submission this week comes from somebody on Discord. I think it was Beth, but I could be wrong. It's an Etsy shop. It's called The Little Book Eater. It is so cool. It is perfume that is inspired by different works of literature. And I really thought that was so cool.
I'm trying to look at them.
Yeah. I, you know how there's always like that odd perfumes that exist out there?
Oh, oddity, like the oddities perfume.
Yeah, like ones that are like dirt.
That's
it's my giving favorite. That same sort of energy because. Literature is obviously so subjective and up to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And I was like kind of scrolling through it and a lot of them weren't like the books I read weren't overly obvious mm-hmm. choices. And I thought that was great. It's really like up to interpretation. I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
These sound amazing.
Yeah. I love that. Ooh, I want to do the Coraline one. The Coraline one sounds amazing.
So cool. Like, yeah, I want to have that. Well, thank you all so much for joining us this week. We hope to see you again on Friday, June 6th for our next Coffee Talk episode. And our next episode on June 13th is going to be the live episode at the Windy City Parafest. So it probably is not going to come live on like podcasting mm-hmm. on June 13th, which will be the 10th episode of season 6. But you can watch it live through streaming. So mm-hmm. we hope to see you there. You can keep an eye on our social media or head to our website, coffeeandcauldrons.com, to find out more information and see what we're up to. And don't forget to join us this Sunday, May 31st, for my class on Baneful Magic.
Yeah. And additionally, our Patreon Magical Beginnings offers a special 25-minute part 2 episode, a huge library of articles about witchcraft, a Discord community full of fun of events, discussions, and people. And we even have tiers to offer one-on-one conversations with Robin and myself. And if you just don't want to have a conversation and want a tarot reading instead, we can do that too, gang.
Yep. So again, please, if you love our sexy, sensual, chef's kiss voices, take a moment to review us from whatever streaming service that you are tuning in from, such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else. We love reading your reviews, and rating us with 5 stars helps us to be seen by others, but rating us at all helps as well. Thank you all so much for everyone who already has and everyone who will in the future. We appreciate you.
And again, this is Coffee and Cauldrons.
With Robin from At a Tired Witch Everywhere.
And I'm Rhea from Magic with Rhea Everywhere.
Are you ready?
Yep.
One,
two, three.
Bye, witches.
5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.